Hello, everybody. Welcome in to Locked On Colts, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Today, as always, your host, Evan Sider, and joined by a very special guest today, draft expert Chad Forbes. You can follow him on Twitter over at NFL Draft Bites. Chad, how do you do that?
Guys, thank you for having me. Excited to talk Colts.
Yeah, no problem at all. I'm glad to have you on, Chad. And we should just dive right into it. We're going to go down the list here of the Colts' main selections through day two. We're going to hit on some of their main prospects here. Then we'll also dive into some more draft talk for you guys, alongside finishing with some more Colts talk, what they should expect for next season. But the first selection, Chad, before we dive into that, what was your overall takeaway from the Colts draft? Because when I see some analysts around there like Mel Kiper and some others, it seems like that's a pretty slam dunk draft for the Colts. I've seen a lot of A's across the board.
Well, allow me to preface. I was a Chris Ballard fanboy before it was trendy. So now it seems like after the first or at least last year's draft, it's like the guy can do no wrong. He's invincible. But another good draft, rock solid, created a lot of competition, some exciting players mixed in there, and then some surprises. So another good draft for the Colts, and Chris Ballard, you guys should trust.
Oh, absolutely. Around here they say trust the binder, and with some Colts fans with how the draft was last year, definitely going to do that again with this haul in 2019. And let's dive into it, Chad. Their first selection, Rocky Sin, they moved back from 26 to 34. They moved up from 26. They got the Redskins selection in 2020, moved up to 46. What was your thoughts on the selection of Rocky Sin, the 34, moving back and still getting the guy that reportedly coveted at 26?
Love the fit for him in that zone scheme, and he'll have some time to learn with Quincy Wilson and opposite, you know, Desir, and then in the slot, they're pretty solid. So he's got a little time to come along. Small school kid that transferred to Temple. What I love about him is he's self-made. He's tough. He's got all the physical skills, and it'll be interesting seeing how he transitions into kind of a zone system for playing predominantly like off man at Temple, but he's obviously a very good corner prospect and just adding depth on the back end. It's, you know, compared to a few years ago, just the cornerback group is just vastly improved.
Absolutely. What's your, do you have like a ceiling for a Rocky Sin or a comparison out there? Because when you see him, he has long arms. He has a really freak physical build, but he's kind of on the slower side for a corner around mid 4.5s. What do you think is a good comp for a guy like Rocky Sin for some fans out there?
Your playing style-wise, it kind of reminded me a little bit of Byron Jones, the corner for the Cowboys, who came out of UConn, originally started at safety. He kind of looks like he's a bit of an interchangeable guy where you could see him playing safety, but they're obviously going to use him in their system at corner. With the upside, you're going to get a very good starting NFL corner if he can, you know, continue to develop, which he's shown that ability the past few years at Temple. And what I love about him is that he kind of fits the Colts culture of being a self-made, tough guy who's going to come in and compete his tail off. And he should have an opportunity to start sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I think really if he proves himself in camp, there's a good chance he could start day one for the Colts with a Quincy Wilson and a Pierre Desir and Kenny Moore. They look pretty stacked at that cornerback position. But let's go into our next selection here, Chad, and that's Ben Banigou, the edge out of TCU. But the Colts are actually going to try him out at outside linebacker in a Jamie Collins type of role. Chris Ballard sees him as a really Swiss Army knife in their defense. What do you think about Banigou?
It's interesting because you haven't seen really a Swiss Army that fit into this kind of defensive system in the past, whether it was when Eberflus was down in Dallas. So I think he's more of a pass rusher, and ultimately that's why he was taken in the second round. And he didn't have to kind of compete with your Tyquan Lewis you guys got draft year last year, Kamoko Touré, and figure out where he fits. But if you're going to be in a predominantly in a nickel package, you're going to have Darius Leonard out there, and then somebody looks a little bit like more like Bobby Okereke or the guy you got in round five. So I don't really see him succeeding as an off-ball linebacker. I think they're just going to try to find a way to get him on the field and obviously at the edge, which, I mean, you can't have enough good pass rushers, but the Colts are a little bit to find a way to creatively utilize him is kind of the question they're probably asking internally. But he's a good prospect. He had a lot of momentum throughout the process where people just continue to get more excited about him. And, you know, coming into kind of like at the end of the season there, my first mock draft, I had him late in round three. And then, you know, leading up to draft day, I heard that he wasn't going to get below, you know, 65 or 66. So Colts got another good player. This could be any emphasis on developing him.
What do you think as far as his ceiling? Because he's a twitchy athlete. He blew up the combine. He's had 17 sacks the last 2 years. It seems like he's kind of a modern-day edge rusher where speed really does matter nowadays.
Yeah, I think he's a modern-day edge rusher who needs to learn how to convert that speed to power. And if I were the Colts, I would say just follow Justin Houston around. Do what he does. Because if he could develop a little bit of a power game and start to deal with NFL tackle, then you've got a potentially a dominant – well, not dominant, but you know, that's a little, I guess, bold at this point. But you could have a real impact edge rusher. So out of that group of young guys you've got behind Houston and Sheard, you know, Lewis and Terray from last year, and then this year getting Banigou. You've got to ultimately find the heir apparent to your kind of elder statesman on the edge, that being Houston and Sheard. And he's a really toolsy guy. He's an exciting player.
Yeah, that's for sure. He's very versatile, like the Colts really love in prospects, and his athletic traits really pop off the page when you look at him on the spider charts around the internet. But let's move on to possibly my favorite selection in this draft class, and the one who I continue to watch more and more of, I get more excited about, and that's Paris Campbell, the wide receiver of Ohio State. He's going to be used probably in the slot in Indianapolis initially, and then probably maybe 3 or 4 years down the line, he might be the guy who gets that baton passed to him from T.Y. Hilton as the number one receiver down the line. What's your expectations for a guy like Paris Hilton? Because not Paris Hilton, excuse me, Paris Campbell. Your thoughts on him? Because it just seems like he has such a higher ceiling than maybe we saw at Ohio State.
I'm higher on Paris Campbell than most, and I'm not into that. I think the NFL showed us this past week that they also have the same mindset of the big-bodied wide receivers who aren't that fast and kind of have trouble separating. So their time speed at the combine may be good, but they're not necessarily guys that can run routes. That's not as exactly as coveted as a guy like Paris Campbell. He gets opened. He's not the best route runner, and you're probably right. He probably starts out in the slot. But you watch him make some plays at Ohio State, and, you know, Big Ten is still fast. It's not the SEC. But you saw him running past defenses. This kid's got real speed. He's had some concentration drops, but, you know, getting him in a system where he's going to work with a guy like Andrew Luck, that's going to be hugely beneficial to him. And the one thing that kind of went off in my head when I first saw that selection was, wow, Deion Kane has come back off injury, has some competition.
Yeah, that's for sure. They're going to have a ton of depth wide receiver. I really love what they're doing right now with Funchess, and you add in a Paris Campbell with a Deion Kane, T.Y. Hill, and Andrew Luck's have so many weapons. We add in those tight ends too. When I watch Paris Campbell, Chad, it seems like there's way more upside than we saw with him at Ohio State, because he was only used predominantly in the screen and really small routes at Ohio State. But when I watch him, I feel like if you use him deep in the right system, like Frank Reich, I think, wants to use him, he could be like a Tyreek Hill kind of player, can he?
See, I saw him run so many, as you said, screens and also a ton of drag routes at Ohio State where he was going across the middle of the field. And then you see the kid run, and the speed that he showed at the combine, low 4.3, that's not just time speed. You watch him play, he can really run. So can he turn into a vertical threat is, you know, really the question mark. Because if that happens, then you've got one of the most talented wide receivers in the draft. And it might take a little bit of time, but as you mentioned, there's depth there, so there's going to be competition. And if the light doesn't come on right away, he'll have a little bit of time to develop his game.
Yeah. How would you grade, I mean, your initial grade of a Paris Campbell? Because I know, like you mentioned, the bigger receivers and in the Colts system, it makes a lot more sense to go with these twitchier wide receivers when they need more yards at the catch. But did it surprise you maybe to see these Paris Campbell types of guys go over the DK Metcalfs of the world?
The big body lumberers, as I call them, the guys that are just huge, physical, contested catch guys. Look at what's going on in Alabama now. If you look at all the wide receivers there, and I think Nick Saban is kind of a forward-looking guy. We'd all agree there. All of his wide receivers are these like 6 foot to 6 foot one, 190 pounders that are quick in and out of breaks. They're fast and they're tough to cover. The big body guy that you could just like kind of put a big corner on, and they can't necessarily run by him with combination of speed and routes, they put a lot of pressure on the quarterback, and they lead to ultimately a lot of turnovers. There's a rare exception, you know, the guys like Anquan Boldin or Vincent Jackson, Mike Evans, that can make contested catches. But in the NFL, the contested catch guy is, I guess, not as – you'd rather have a guy that gets open. And with Paris Campbell, you got a guy who's got the ability to get open. So I was not surprised to see him go ahead of, you know, DK Metcalf. And I think he's a great fit for the Colts. And they definitely did their work on the wide receivers. They were just in A.J. Brown and a couple of the other guys. But I think Campbell's a great fit.
I'm right there with you. I think Paris Campbell's going to excel right away in this Colts system under Frank Reich and Nick Sirianni. But our next selection on the board here, third round, number 89 overall, Bobby Okereke, the linebacker out of Stanford, the longest wingspan in this class, really tested off the charts as well for a linebacker too. I think pairing him alongside Darius Leonard and an Anthony Walker should really excite some Colts out there.
He looks like Darius Leonard with those arms and speed. And they certainly have a type they look at for at that position, that's for sure. And he's a, you know, Stanford guy. I can't say I know him, but I assume he's a pretty smart one. And you know, the idea of him and Darius Leonard and that nickel package running around with those long arms covering a lot of ground, it's that's a good selection, and they got him at the right spot in the draft.
Where did you value Okereke? Because I saw some people had him as a top 60 prospect, some had him as like out of their top 100. Where did you grade him?
See, it's interesting. I had all of the picks up through Kerry Willis. They were all in my top 100. for the Colts. So I think I had Okereke a little bit lower actually than Kerry Willis. I had him at Kerry Willis around 90 and Okereke around like 93 or 94. And just my question with Okereke is, does it transition to the NFL quickly? And is he going to be a starting Mike, Will? Where does he kind of fit? And also some certain systems I don't think he'd fit into. But with the Colts, the big guys that can run and, you know, kind of move a little bit sideline to sideline and drop in the zone, he should fit pretty well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Okereke and that linebacking group with a Walker and a Leonard is going to be really intriguing down the line, especially when you add in Ben Banigou and his Swiss Army knife capabilities too. But let's move on here to our next selection, which is Kari Willis at Michigan State, where you're alluding to, Chad. How do you like him? Because as Chris Ballard said in his press conference after the draft, he was actually considering going with Kari Willis at 89 overall with their third round selection. Do you think Willis is a good fit alongside him, Lee Clicker, long term?
Well, I mentioned previous to the draft that I thought there was a cluster of about six safeties that were going to go on day two. And Jim Nagy, who's a senior bowl director, came back to me and said, go watch Kari Willis a couple times. So I went back and watched Kari Willis. And you don't necessarily see a really explosive player, but you see a guy that's physical, he's smart, and he's always in the right place. He seems to just make the play consistently. And if you're going to have a guy like Malik Hooker playing on the back end, you've got a guy like Kari Willis, just a little more versatile in terms of he can play up near the line of scrimmage. I think he's going to come along, and I think he's going to push Clayton Gethers pretty quickly for the starting strong safety role.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me at all, because you see how instinctual Kari Willis is. I watched some film of him against Michigan, and some of the plays he was making, he was calling them out before they were happening, and you need a guy like that in your back end alongside Emily Cooker, who's like a free-range safety, so to say. How do you think, if we're going more into the draft on day three now, there's Marvell Tell, EJ Speed, who is the one sleeper selection, maybe out of those final selects for the Colts, that maybe intrigued you the most?
Marvell Tell has to intrigue you. You know, the idea that they got a guy that size that they think they can play corner in the NFL, you know, he might not transition there and it might not work out immediately. And he might be a guy that's even tough to stick on that 53 because there's going to be so much competition. But he's a very intriguing player. And I love what they said about was EJ Speed, but even they weren't really on to him until about a month ago, because I'll be honest, he was the first guy selected where I said, who? And then I read a little bit up on him and his background. He sounds like a really interesting player. And I just love the idea that even though the offensive line has become a strength, you can't have enough good quality offensive line with the Raven Clark and Bone both getting glue and the other third backup getting close to free agency. Why not add a couple guys back into that unit and see if maybe one of them stick on the roster and then potentially, you know, consider them for the practice squad. So I like those two picks. I just thought that was smart move by Ballard, because this would be tough for them to sign undrafted offensive linemen given that it's gonna be so difficult to make the roster.
Chad, I wanted to ask you your overall opinion right now of the Colts front office, because it feels like just a polar opposite shift from under Ryan Grigson to now with Chris Bowder and the rest of the guys in there, Ed Dodge, Rex Hogan. It feels like the Colts front office is probably the most structured and the most well-rounded one right now in the NFL. What's your thoughts on how the Colts are really operating right now?
Colts fans should wake up every morning and be thankful that Josh McDaniels turned down the head coaching job, because I really do believe that Jim Irsay wanted Josh McDaniels. He bought into the hype of New England. And what you've got there is not just a great group of evaluators, but a seamless fit with the coaching staff, where they're all on the same page. Frank Reich and Chris Ballard aren't big ego guys, right? Frank's willing to admit that, you know, yep, this Chris handles the other player acquisition. He controls the 53. He takes my input. And every front office and coaching staff, they all start out by saying it's going to be collaborative. And we're going to take, you know, a joint approach where we're going to be on the same page. And then it quickly breaks down. The egos come out and there's finger pointing, and they ultimately don't run as collaborative groups. And I think it's the direct opposite of Indianapolis. I think the first year of this group together, they really all got on the same page. Keeping Eberflus there was just a huge to keep him in the fold, to let him run that defense. And it's one of the best running front offices. And to go from what you had with, I think, probably one of the worst general managers football I've seen in a long time, Ryan Grigson, to really just a great group of evaluators with good coaching staff, it's just a seismic change, and we're seeing it pay huge dividends.
Is there any other GM coach combo you take over Chris Ballard and Frank Reich right now, Chad?
I think these questions are always tough. It's like, would you take a young quarterback? Would you take Tom Brady? Well, I would take the young quarterback because I see that there's a sustainable footprint to go forward. So when I look at the dynamic of Reich and Ballard, what they've established in just a year together, it's hard to say there's another front office you'd prefer. And I think Maybe you could make an argument that John Schneider, but Pete Carroll's getting up there. He's around 70s. The Seahawks maybe aren't the right group. Chargers have a very good dynamic, but yeah, I really think it's kind of crazy to say because, as you mentioned, you know, just 24 months ago or so, or maybe 30 months ago, you had what's his name in there, Gregson, who was just, I mean, the guy was confused, would be a nice way to put it. But, you know, I think I've had enough negative things to say about Ryan Gregson. But now you really got mature adults in the building. And you're right, it's one of becoming one of the pillar franchises again.
Yeah, it's nice to see that change after a period where it really went downhill for a little bit. But let's bounce over a little bit, Chad, to some general draft takes to get off the Colts for a second. We'll come back to the Colts here in a few minutes. But what was your main reaction to – I want to get your thoughts on the Kyler Murray situation in Arizona, because – I've never heard of a situation where you trade for a quarterback in the top 10, then you take a guy again, number one overall, with Kyler Murray. What was your whole thoughts on that Rosen-Murray dynamic and how it worked out with Arizona?
I got a friend out there who's very close to Steve Keim and has known him for about 20 years. And the insight that I got from him was that it was very ownership-driven, the selection, in the sense that the business of football mattered, and having a guy who's just such a magnetic star like Kyler Murray was very attractive to that ownership group out there. And giving up on handled it. I would say a lot of the direction came from the league office in terms of they didn't want any of the buzz or the intrigue of the draft to be gone. So they wanted Rosen to at least stick around through draft day. And ultimately, I mean, they gave up picks to move up for Rosen the year before, and they got pennies on the dollar. So that's just the mismanagement. And another thing that I heard from my friend who's pretty close to Kyle is that, you know, the owner didn't want to send him to a situation where he would look like an idiot in the next 12 months. So they sent him to Miami for a second-round pick, which they turned into Andy Isabella and a future fifth. That's just poor management. And they spent a lot of money on the quarterback position the last 2 years, whether, you know, not just on draft capital, but also, you know, Bradford and Mike Glennon, and they paid a lot of money to Rosen for 1 year. So it's just been really poorly managed.
Yeah, that's for sure. I'm actually based out here in Arizona for the time being with school, and you just see just how much overhaul has been at the quarterback position with Sam Bradford, Mike Glennon, Josh Rosen, not Kyler Murray, all taking that position in the last 13 months. It's just a carousel right now in Arizona. But what's your overall other draft winners outside of the Colts, Chad? Because I think a team like the Redskins and the Colts trade up with had a solid draft. I know maybe the Bears had a solid draft, even though they had very few picks. Who are some winners for you on your end?
It's hard to say who was the draft winner because you have to take it in context of what they did the entire offseason and say who improved their football team overall. I'd agree with you. The Bears did a decent job. I thought the Eagles did a great job this offseason, just continuing to find more cap space, keep the guys that they felt they couldn't replace, and then they had a pretty solid draft. I'm probably one of the lone people that say I thought the Giants did a good job, but I'm higher on Daniel Jones than most, and I thought they got two really good football players in Dexter Lawrence and DeAndre Baker also there in the first round. So sure, it hurts to lose Odell Beckham and a player of his caliber, but I thought they did a nice job just continuing to build out that roster. Chargers did another solid job. I thought the Broncos quietly had a pretty good draft in offseason. I'm not really high on Joe Flacco. I don't think we're ever going to rediscover the fountain of youth there. But you know, just in terms of addressing the quarterback, being patient, waiting for Drew Lock to fall to their laps to round two, also picking up an extra second-round pick by trading down and getting really a dynamic tight end, which they haven't been able to find for really since Sterling Sharp, some would say. Shannon Sharp, I thought Noah Fant could be a real dynamic player for them. And I like Risner and Draymond Jones. I like that pick. I like the way they're going with Vic Fangio. I thought the Chiefs have had a disaster of an offseason. And the Raiders, you know, they had a lot of picks. I'm not sure they necessarily turned them into a great haul of impact players, but time will tell.
I'm very curious, Chad. So you brought up the Giants there. I was actually going to bring them for our next question about the losers of this draft, because I thought that they really overdrafted Daniel Jones, but you seem pretty high on Daniel Jones. What's your thoughts on the quarterback from Duke?
Yeah, I think that context is important when evaluating quarterbacks, and he didn't have a supporting cast around him. He was consistently under pressure. His receivers dropped a ton of balls, and you know, it sounds like I'm making excuses, which a lot of people criticized me for doing last year on Josh Allen. But with Daniel Jones, what I like about him is that in the NFL game, you got to be able to deal with pressure, stay in the pocket. When you get hit, get back up. And for a guy that's going to come into the kind of the New York bubble, which is the media's tough on you there, I like his personality and the way that he's dealt with a little bit of adversity down at Duke. And getting that team to 8-5 was not easy. And, you know, you want to watch a good tape on Daniel Jones, go watch the Temple game, that bowl game he played where he knocked out a defense and ultimately ended up having two kids drafted and a couple more signed undrafted. But he's got some good tape. He's also got some issues he's got to clean up. So you know, sixth overall is rich for a guy you're going to be sitting for at least a year. But, you know, I do think there's a lot of upside there in his young quarterback. And, you know, I like him. I also like what the Redskins did, though. I think getting the another quarterback in that room, and, you know, they've also been a team where the last 10 years it's really invested a ton of money and picks in quarterback. But, you know, rolling into a season with Case Keenum and Colt McCoy was not going to exactly inspire a lot of confidence amongst the fan base. So being patient, not trading up to get Haskins, I thought that paid a huge dividend in terms of they were able to keep their draft picks and come away with him and Montez Sweat. So that's pretty exciting for the Redskins.
Yeah, definitely. The Jones and Haskins selection are really intriguing to look at, and they're definitely going to be interesting to watch in the same division next to each other for the next 10-plus years. But, Chad, we're going to put over to our losers here as far as maybe some teams that had you scratching your head on draft night. Who were some teams that maybe you thought maybe might have bungled the draft away a little bit?
I think the Lions, drafting the tight end, I liked Hockenson. He got a little bit overhyped throughout the process. It was like, oh, my gosh. We finally seen a tight end come from college who can catch the ball and actually block, rather than saying he's a tight end and, you know, positional value matters. Obviously, they were able to add a pass rusher in free agency, but I thought that pick, you know, sure, good pick. It's kind of like hitting a double. When you're in the top 10 and you're a team like them that, you know, has six wins, you got to be looking for more of a home run. And I thought in round two, the linebacker they drafted from Hawaii was just a huge, huge reach. I mean, I had him ranked right around Okereke there at the end of round three, and they picked him at 40, 44, so the Lions draft just kind of it left a lot to be inspired, and I just think the direction of that front office right now is a little off.
Yeah, I feel like Detroit, unfortunately, that situation with them is a little rough right now, and Matt Patricia might be on the hot seat next year with him. And what do you think about that situation, Detroit, since we're on that topic for a second? Because, I mean, we heard about Matt Patricia possibly being fired next year, and I think if the Lions have another bad season, I think maybe there's going to be a big overhaul there.
Boards are very renowned for being patient, right? You know, they don't want to cycle coaches in and out. They want to build a franchise kind of like the Ravens or the Giants, where there's stability at the coaching position. But you can't deny that since Jim Caldwell, we're not going to confuse him for a Hall of Fame coach anytime soon. But the team was, you know, at least much more competitive when he was there, and Stafford was playing at a higher level. And what I don't like that's coming out of Detroit, and I mention this a lot, is it's like pretty much public knowledge around the league that in the next year Matthew Stafford's going to be available in trades. And I feel like the group there, Bob Quinn, Matt Patricia, they're almost trying to cast blame on Stafford rather than realizing they haven't built much support around him. And, you know, I just think that they've committed so many resources to trying to build a running game, which they haven't been able to do. And they kind of just gave up on it and said, all right, let's shift our focus to defense and let's go sign a bunch of, you know, former Patriots and overpay them. So I think that's just a situation that's getting more messy by the day.
Yeah, that's for sure. If there's going to be some drama to follow next year, it could be a team like Detroit. But let's close here, Chad, on some Colts thoughts once more. And after that draft class and with free agency, they got Justin Houston, Devin Funchess. They also just signed Spencer Ware, the former Chiefs running back. How do you feel the Colts stack up next year in the AFC? Because I think they're honestly up near the top.
Absolutely. I think they're, you know, Vegas will tell you they're one of the, you know, favorites for the Super Bowl. And, you know, I was going through the roster today, just kind of beginning to project out what a 53-man would look like, you know, and see where the kind of the roster battles were. And I got into that defensive backfield after the draft, and I said, wow, Nate Harrison, who I think is a pretty good player, the Temple defensive back, who's got the versatility, he's going to have a tough time making the 53. And, you know, a few years ago, it was like, you know, if you could kind of run, you had some ball skills, and you might have an interest in tackling, you could make the Colts roster in the defensive backfield. So I think that's an interesting just development. It's just so much competition. Last year, they cut a guy like John Simon who could play, he could play football in the NFL, right? Because they had enough competition on the defensive front, and they're just continuing to add more of that. And that's really how you build a great team, and that great culture is you reward guys who play well. And that's how you're going to build a really talented roster over the next, you know, 4 or 5 years around Andrew Luck. And once you got the franchise quarterback in place and some building blocks, which they do, it's really exciting. And can they knock off the Patriots, the Chiefs, the Chargers? That'll be the test. And I think that they're heading in the right direction, that's for sure.
Do you feel like maybe, I mean, playing as far as the pieces that the Chiefs have lost so far with, you have Kareem Hunt, now you're going to lose Tyreek Hill, I assume, pretty soon. Do you feel like the Colts may be that team that could leapfrog them as far as being that number one contender in New England?
Absolutely. And that's, they're not going to be able to beat New England by running by them. And I think that's what Chris Ballard realize in terms of building this roster is the failures of Bill Polian, while he won a Super Bowl, was he built a team that ultimately wasn't physical enough to win in January and win in February. And if you got them outside the dome, you could take advantage of the fact that they were a little soft. Chris Ballard is building a physical football team that tackles and hits, and that's how you beat the Patriots. You look at the Giants, who have had success against them even back years ago, or over the years, the Ravens teams have done pretty well against the Patriots. It's because they get off the bus and they can beat them in the physical game. And if you do that with a franchise quarterback like Andrew Luck, who can also, you know, move the ball down the field and be, you know, a high percentage passing quarterback, you've got the framework to beat the Patriots. So I think the Chiefs without Hill and it's the speed there and without Kareem Hunt, sure. I mean, they're putting a lot of faith in the kid they drafted around two, Mecole Hardman, to really come in and contribute immediately. And they got to get more out of Sammy Watkins. I think their offensive line is going to start to regress a little bit. So I do think that the AFC behind the Patriots is going to be really wide open. I think Colts, Chargers, they're right there knocking on the door at the Texans. And the AFC is getting a lot more competitive than it was, you know, 3 or 4 years ago.
Let me close on this chat with Andrew Luck. Just coming back from what he did the past couple of years with his shoulder, now putting up nearly 40 touchdowns last year. With the weapons they have now, I mean, you add in Paris Campbell, Devin Funchess into that room with a Deion Kane, T.Y. Hilton, those tight ends as well with Marlon Mack in the offensive line. There's so much pieces for Andrew Luck now where I feel like as entering age 30 and really into his prime right now, I think he's a really dark horse candidate for MVP next year.
You know, to me, he's a candidate for MVP every year. Statistics are just to voters so, you know, they matter too much, right? But last year, you could have had a real argument that Andrew Luck was the MVP and not Patrick Mahomes. And that's with all due respect to what Mahomes did in Kansas City with the 50 touchdowns. But without Andrew Luck, even with a quarterback who I think is a pretty good backup in Jacoby Brissett, they're a 5 or 6 win team or 4 win team. So Andrew Luck does so much. He is a franchise quarterback and an MVP candidate perennially.
Chad, this is really fun. I appreciate you coming on and the time today. And if listeners don't know where to follow you at or where to find your work, you can go ahead and plug whatever you want for the moment.
Yeah, sure, guys. Just find me on Twitter at NFL Draft Bites. Always looking forward to talking football and the Colts. So hit me up on the ads or DM me, and I'd love to talk Colts. Thank you for the time, and definitely an exciting season for you guys coming up.
All righty, Chad. I appreciate the time, and thanks, everyone, for listening in. I'll be back to you guys tomorrow for next episode.